This is Julie.
Hey, calendar, what's my morning like?
Julie's about to have a long day.
At 9 a.m., soccer carpool. 9:10, purchase birthday card. 9:05, dry cleaning.
Did you just go backwards?
I'm sorry, I can't fit that question into your schedule. 9:15, cry for a little bit.
For days that won't end, let Schwann's help. With Schwann's, you can get delicious meals that go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. Visit today at Schwann's.com.
Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist of billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
So, it's 1973 in Eastern Maine, and this guy sits there in a laundry room late at night, hacking away at a typewriter. He couldn't afford an office, so he's like wedged in between the washer and the dryer, where he made a little makeshift desk. And he's hacking away late at night on a typewriter, going after his dream. He was married, him and his wife had a newborn and a toddler. They could barely make ends meet. He was living in a trailer. He was working the overnight shift as a janitor. His wife was working the second shift at Dunkin' Donuts. And he continued to have this dream of writing this story. So he sat there night after night when he wasn't working, any minute he could find, just hacking away at this typewriter. And finally, the manuscript was done. So he sent it into the publisher. Now this is back in the 1970s. You can't self-publish and stuff back then. It's a big deal just to get, there's probably 10 main publishers. So just for them to give you like a rejection letter, half the time you don't even hear back. So he sent it in, he gets rejected, like not just one time, because that's a process, but not five times. We're talking 30 times he got rejected. And he's sitting there in his trailer, he can barely make ends meet, and he gets the manuscript and he throws it in the trash and he's like, I'm done, I give up, I can't do it anymore. And it was his wife that reached down and pulled it out. And she wiped it off and she's like, you can't give up, like, I believe in you. Well, that person ended up to be Stephen King, by the way, who has gone on to sell 350 million books. One of the most successful authors in history, which is mind-blowing. But I know a lot of you right now are thinking, like, that's an awesome story, that's motivational, but, like, Mark, how is that dangerous had he not gone after that dream? And, oh yeah, I don't have a clicker. So, yeah, that sounds awesome. Who's that handsome fellow? Not that. So, geez, and this is a serious moment, too, and it just... But that was supposed to be like, boom, my powerful, and there's my mugshot in jail. That's awesome. So, but in all seriousness, though, this was me in jail at age 17, right when I was turning 18. That's my actual mugshot. You can see right here in my left eye, it was beaten in, it was fractured, my jaw was broken. I almost died. I was also living in a trailer. I managed to graduate high school early somehow, not with an impressive GPA by any means, but I was not only just doing drugs, I was selling drugs, driving intoxicated all the time. The two roommates I lived with, we were doing and dealing everything. I mean, it was getting to the level of methamphetamines. It was horrible. And I woke up like that on the jail cell floor. And it was like a meteor like falling from the sky. Like I was just laying there, it was just like boom! And my eyes jolted open. It was like I fell into my body. And all I could feel was the cold cement floor under me. And I had no idea where I was. And I remember I looked up and I saw this giant dude with this grizzly beard this kind of like huge, like biker, kind of scary looking grown man, and I'm just a 17-year-old kid, and I see him sitting there in the corner, and then all of a sudden a door opens, and a firm voice I hear, "Mark Menard, step outside." So like I get up and my body's aching and I'm feeling like I'm a 90-year-old man as I come across there and I'm trying to figure out where I am, what's going on. And that's when I found out I was in jail. They sat me down to show me my mugshot that they had taken and that popped up on the screen. And I was like, who the heck, who is that? Like, what, that's not me. And then my face started throbbing with pain. And the cop told me from the reports that I was in jail. And he said when he read my report when I was in there, he didn't think I was in the holding cell. He just assumed I was dead. He said, your blood alcohol was so high, I've never seen something like that when someone is alive still. And as horrible as this sounds, I think the only way that I lived is because I was doing so many other drugs and cocaine and horrible things along with all the alcohol I was drinking. That made me not die. That made my blood alcohol so high. But I didn't remember how I had gotten there, what had happened. And it took, I had rear-ended someone. I read from the police reports. Later on, I learned all this at a drive-thru at 2 a.m. at a place called Wiener Dog. I don't know if they have it out here. It's open all night long. Somehow I managed to drive my car there and the only vivid memory I have is just like I was behind this giant truck and I just remember kind of like being in the drive-thru line and just everything going blurry. And basically I just must have passed out, briskly rear-ended him, and this dude was like 37, had a lot of anger problems. The police report said he opened my door and I was just like laying there like this, like a catatonic punching bag, and he just beat the living crap out of me. Like, he beat me down so bad. I had to get my jaw wired shut. And when I was out of there, when I was out of jail, I remember I was feeling so low. I was feeling so down and depressed. It was so dark. And I was going back and forth between the trailer I was living with and my friends that were doing and selling drugs still. And then I was sometimes staying with my parents. And I remember I was just trying to figure stuff out. Like I was having suicidal thoughts. And the thing where Stephen King ties in this story is I randomly came across a book. And this is cool because I found the actual book. It was Stephen King's Pet Sematary. I found this in my parents' basement. And at age 18, I read the first book in my entire life. I had never read a book before then. Like, I did the bare minimum it took to get my book reports done. I knew how to read, but I always thought that I wasn't a good reader. I thought I was too stupid. I didn't think I could do that. But it took, at that age, like, this is exactly what I needed, a story like this. It started opening up something that I forgot that I had. And it was my imagination. And I remember, I'll never forget it, like I was excited to wake up and read the next day. And this led on to reading more and more books. It led to me reading the Bible more. It led to my whole journey of personal development. It led to me going to college. And all of this is the ripple effect. Head Stephen King, who sat in that trailer that day, all those nights hacking away at that typewriter, when 30 publishers turned him down, had he given up on his dream? You saw all those amazing things with Dreamshine, all those lives that are being changed. I wouldn't even be standing here right now. I would be dead. And like, this is how important, this is why I keep saying it's not about us. Sharing your amazing treasure that's inside you. All of you have your own dream, your own story, your own special treasure to unearth that's unique to you. You never know the ripple effect that it's going to have across the world by sharing it. And I always hope, if anyone knows Stephen King, by the way, or something, I just tell him, give him a huge hug for me. Because he changed my life. And so what I'm going to talk about today is the four main myths that I've discovered that people believe that stop you from doing your dreams. I'm going to expose these, the four dream killers. So I need my little clicker. Awesome. So the first one is the passion myth. Now, a lot of you with your pink forks and stuff, when you think of going after your dream and you say you're passionate about it, you think like passion is like someone's like, woo, yeah, boom, here we go. And someone's screaming and they're jumping and every day they're so excited. They're like coming in and do you guys remember like this sweet move, like the running man? Like I'm coming in like, yeah, here we go, everyone, woo, start clapping, everyone's cheering. Yeah, pink fork for the running man. That's not what passion is. See, passion has nothing to do with feelings. It has nothing to do with feelings. And we see these bios of all these amazing people that have done these incredible things, but we never see the battle scars behind the scenes that they've gone through to get there. Like I have mine, you can look at it. And it shows like owner of dreams, best-selling author, and everything looks so great, but you don't see the real battle that takes place behind the scenes. And when I'm talking about passion, when you're continuing to go after your dream, whatever it is for you, whatever level you're at, if it's sharing your story, if it's writing your book, if it's building your business, if it's going after that marriage again. So sometimes the scariest part is to have hope again. Because if you have hope, that puts you at risk of failing. And isn't it so much easier to just... I was at a time where we were separated in our marriage years ago. And I remember we were separated and we were going to start doing counseling. And I remember it was like, I don't want to go. I don't want to do that anymore. Because honestly, I was afraid that to hope again, because I had finally started to get to, okay, we're going to be separated now. This is the way it's going to be. And when we talked about that, I'm scared to hope again, because that means I have to open up not only to fail, but that means we have to open up to be vulnerable. That means we have to open up to having more adversity. That means we have to open up to actually someone else can turn us down. Our dreams can fail. We can write our books, they can get rejected by 30 publishers. So what you need to have, and by the way, my wife and I have been now married for 12 years and have 5 kids, so we've worked it out. But I wasn't doing the running man and jumping up and down and doing jumping jacks every day as we were going through that process. But I was passionate about our marriage because I was committed to something that was bigger than us. And as all of you are going after, whatever it is that your dreams are, whatever it is that you're working on, you have to have something that's bigger than you, or else you're going to give up along the way. And when you saw that about Dreamshine, you don't see that when I went to open Dreamshine, it was the recession. It was 2007. And my office was literally in a barn. I had just got married. We had 2 kids back to back. I was teaching special education. And I left that job to start Dreamshine full time. I had spent a year behind the scenes opening that up. Nowhere would give me a business loan. And I had good credit. Every place turned me down. So also during that time, I applied for this Bachelor of Nursing School. Was this really accelerated program. I had worked really hard to get into it. I had applied to it like a year earlier, and because I had my degree, it would have worked out. It was like a 9-month program. I would have got out, and I would have started off making like $65,000 a year with full benefits. That would have been doing good. And I just got accepted into that program right when, like, so funny the way God works, right when Dreamshine got like accepted to be open as an agency. Like literally the next day, I get accepted into this accelerated PSN program that I had been trying to get in for years. And I knew I couldn't do both of them at the same time. So I had to respectfully turn that down. And I remember the ladies like, Mark, are you sure about this? Do you realize how hard it is? We only pick like 50 people out each year for this, out of thousands. And by the way, if you turn this down, you'll have to reapply. This means like 4 or 5 years. We have kid number two on the way. It's the recession. My office is in a barn. and then to top it off, I told him, no, I'm going after it. And to top him off, like, I'm sitting there, we're getting ready to start Dreamshine. We don't even have our first client enrolled yet. And I talked about, I get a phone call from a lady that works very high up at the state. And that was back when we had flip phones. So I like flip my little phone open. I'm 26 years old at the time. Dreamshine hasn't even opened yet. I still to this day don't know how she heard about me. I'm like mailing, I was making brochures like on a Word program and mailing them back like before you could scan an email. I'm actually mailing them in the real mail, dropping them off everywhere. I had a fax machine that was connected through an extension cord in the barn. And I answer the phone, and on the other end, this lady's like, hi, I'm so-and-so. I don't need to mention her name, but she made it very clear. I work very high up at the state next to the governor. We've been doing it this way for 35 odd years, and I'm just calling you to do you a favor to let you know you shouldn't open Dreamshine. And like, I'm like, who, what? How did you get my number? Is this a joke? Why are you, and then I said, are you threatening me? And she goes, oh no, I'm not threatening you. I'm just letting you know that we've been doing it this way. We have all of our own programs that the state owns. We control the funding, and it's not going to work out for you, and I'm trying to help you. I said, thank you so much for your help. Don't ever call me again. And I hung up. Again, passion. I'm not doing jumping jacks and doing the running man in this moment. When people say, when you're going after your dream, when they say like, you're gonna enjoy it and you'll never have to work another day in your life again, people get that kind of twisted and they think that means you're gonna be, yes, everything's gonna be awesome. The thing is, you're gonna work harder than you've ever had to work in your life, but it's gonna be different because you're gonna connect it to your why. And for me, it was this young man named Brian Brooks. I don't know how many times I've told this, and I can barely not ever do it without tearing up, but he was a young man born with autism, dual diagnosis of autism, developmental disabilities, in his mid-20s, and I used to do weekend care with him at that time. He's working multiple jobs, and I remember after high school, his mom tried him, just get that over, sorry, in one of those state programs that I was talking about that wonderful lady that gave me the great help called that monopolized the state. The only ones they had available, they had him in it. And he would start screaming and digging into his skin and wouldn't be eating and would come home at night. And his mom was so worried about him, and she was thinking, maybe he's adjusting because he's in a new environment. This is after school. And she went and visited him at what they call the workshop. And it was like this giant warehouse with these horrible fluorescent lights. I was describing it on there. And she saw him, and all that she let him do is he just sat there, and he's an active young man. And he was digging so much into his skin that it'd be bleeding and there'd be blood coming out, and he was ripping out the scabs. She'd go to take him in the morning and he would just be screaming every day. So she had to quit her entire career. She's a single mom raising him. And he couldn't be left home alone. He's very high functioning in a lot of ways, but he needs assistance with eating. He doesn't understand, like, he could turn things up and start a fire. He doesn't understand a lot of those things. She had to quit her full career and got something. I think she got a job doing medical billing, and he was home with her every day. So he was safe. But when I told her about Dreamshine, she was so excited about it. And she kept pushing me. So when I got off the phone with that lady, when my office was in a barn, like when everything was against me, I would think of Brian. And I would imagine him being at this place like Dreamshine where he would have these amazing options. He would be able to do all these different things. And then I started thinking, if this is going on with Brian, think how many other individuals that this is happening to. This isn't about me. And so when we're going after our dreams, it's not about just being passionate. Passionate really means to be committed. It means to be committed to your why, that you're going to continue to go after it and you're not going to give up. You don't get to give up. And your why is what keeps pushing you forward. You have to believe that it's bigger than you, but don't be temporarily attached to those feelings, that when you go through those storms, don't ever make a permanent decision based on a temporary feeling. That's one of the most important things I can tell you, is never, ever, ever make a permanent decision based on a short-term feeling that you're having in that moment, because feelings come and go. That's not what passion is. So this next, the next one is the confidence myth. Now, a lot of people, including me, when you saw me in jail, I used to think that people that had confidence, that had charisma, that were successful, that they were born with it. Like, I would see someone like me right now speaking, and I'd be like, I could never do that. That guy never gets nervous. That guy's never been through adversity. He was born with charisma. He's never had any struggle. She's never had this. And I thought confidence is something you just either have or you don't have. And I would look at these like successful people and think, I can't do that. I can't speak. I can't write a book. I can't have a company. I don't have that natural confidence in me. I'm terrified. I have fear all the time. I go through anxiety. I was this loser in jail. But then I've continued to learn throughout my own life that that's a bunch of crap. Confidence is a muscle. We all have the ability to grow it as much as we possibly want to at whatever we're doing. But confidence is built by putting the reps in. And if you hit the little next little button, it should. So when I was in jail and I started making that transition from in between there and Dreamshine, the first thing that started building it, I told you, was I read that book, Pet Sematary. And one of the greatest things that is like steroids to confidence is adversity. See, we can look at adversity as a horrible thing, or we can realize that I started reading more and thinking, you know what, I'm thinking I can go to college. I used to think I was way too stupid and losers like me don't go to college. And both the guys I lived with in the trailer at that time that I was doing drugs and selling drugs with told me, you can't go to college. People like us don't go to college. And they said, you're a sellout. What, you think you're better than us? And I'm not going to lie, I would hear stuff in my head. I'm already doubting myself enough. And then you hear that, that's just another punch in the face. But I kept reading more books and I realized I was actually good at reading. I realized I'm not stupid, and that started building that confidence muscle. So then I got into college. And this isn't about college. Whether or not you go to college, that's on you. Everyone has their own journey. But for me, at that point in time, it was about making it through something and finishing something. Because my life was a mess before that. And so I went to college, and then I started having these wonderful things. Actually, raise your pink fork if you have ever had this great thing called an anxiety attack at any time in your life. Have you ever had a panic attack? Wow. This is my type of room. Well, so now I'm not doing all the drugs, I'm not drinking, and I have to deal with this fun thing called being sober and all these social situations. And I was like, oh crap. I remember I'm sitting there in a college class one day, and all of a sudden, I didn't know what anxiety was. I didn't know what a panic attack was. And it was just like, I couldn't breathe. My face was beet red like a tomato, and sweat started just dripping down my face like a waterfall. And I thought I was gonna die. And I'm like looking, and I'm in college, I'm looking around like there's these dude, like tough, I'm working out in the gym, there's like my tough dudes in there, there's like these hot pretty girls in there, and I'm like trying to be cool and play it off and thinking I'm having a heart attack and dying at the same time and sweating. And I try to nonchalantly go to the bathroom, and I remember I would go to the bathroom, I'd be splashing water on my face like, God, please help me. Just what is going on? And I started researching what anxiety was, what panic attacks were, and I realized more and more that this is something that I know some people, there's some, they tried me on some medications, and that for me personally made it worse. But I'm not telling people, whatever works for you. But for me, it, in a lot of areas, it made things even escalate. And I kept realizing, well, if I'm not actually having a heart attack, I'm not gonna die. Although I'd wake up even at night like, and I couldn't breathe, and it would just come out of nowhere. And then I started having a fear that it was gonna happen, so I would start missing class. Because I'd start going to that place called worry in our head. That's the worst place that you could ever go. Like, as soon as you go there, leave as fast as you can. Because I'd worry, I'd dwell, and I'd start having like a pre-panic attack before I even went to class. And I realized it was something that I had to go through, and what I did, how your confidence builds by the reps, as I look back and I'm like, you know what? If I got through being in jail, if I got through almost dying and living with those guys, and now I'm able to go to college, I can get through this. And for me, college wasn't even about education. It became about perseverance. It taught me that if I continue to persevere just one day, one step at a time. Remember, I was telling you all earlier, I dropped speech class 3 times because I was so terrified to speak in public. I was the anxiety and panic attacks didn't just magically disappear. That's the thing about confidence. It's a muscle, and you keep building it along the way. So then as I opened Dreamshine, I was able to reflect on that adversity I went through with jail, the panic attacks, and I realized those adversities, like I said, that's like steroids. It helps build that confidence muscle more and more. So when I'd face something else, I'd say I got through that, and I thought that would be impossible. Now I'm faced with this next impossible. And I've said this before, impossible. Because like in all the movies, if you watch every movie, impossible is always how it starts, and impossible is actually where every great adventure begins. It all starts with this impossible fool's hope. And so I just continued to push through this and this confidence that I would build. And if you click the next one, please, thank you. So Dreamshine's growing, it's doing awesome, we're growing, and then all of a sudden, God puts this vision of me speaking to all these people. He put this thing in my head and my gut. We were talking earlier about follow your instincts. What was that great thing? Trust your instincts. Sometimes I get kind of a pissed. Obey. So I tried everything I can not to obey these instincts when God showed me in a freaking stadium filled with hundreds of thousands of people speaking. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, what the heck is that? Get that out of me. What is that? I don't want the spotlight or any of that thing. What is this about, God? And it kept coming. It's like when you have something that keeps, it's not like this audible voice comes from the sky for me. It's kind of like this pulling at your gut. And all of you that have that, for whatever it is that you want to go after, like you have this little pulling and it doesn't go away, that's what you're supposed to be doing. The good news and the bad news, it's always the scarier thing. Yeah, it is. But guess what? Each little scary thing you get to builds that confidence muscle even stronger. And I learned along that journey, it allows you to activate your faith.
This is Julie.
Hey, calendar, what's my morning like?
Julie's about to have a long day.
At 9 a.m., soccer carpool. 9:10, purchase birthday card. 905, dry cleaning.
Did you just go backwards?
I'm sorry, I can't fit that question into your schedule. 915, cry for a little bit.
For days that won't end, let Schwann's help. With Schwann's, you can get delicious meals that go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. Visit today at Schwann's.com.
Save big at Banana Republic Factory with 60% off the entire store. Our biggest sale of the year. Plus, take an extra 50% off clearance. Stock up on dresses, shirts, and shorts under $15. Find your nearest store or shop online only at Banana Republic Factory.